Rolling.
This is the Fed Sock Films Podcast,
where we continue the conversation sparked on film.
Quiet on set.
You want to know what freedom tastes like? It tastes like this beer.
Take one.
This is, in fact, the classic solution in search of a problem.
Action.
That cannot help but be controversial.
Cut.
With expert discussion and analysis.
With the greatest legal minds on the topic today.
The Fed Sock Films Podcast.
It's a wrap.
Do you know what an omnibus is? If you said it's a bus, you're correct. If you said it's a collection of stories, you're also correct. And if you said it's a type of spending bill that appropriates discretionary government spending, you're also correct. Hey there, and welcome to the FedSoc Films Podcast. I'm Anne Hartley, your definitive host. Together with the Article 1 Initiative, we recently released a film about omnibus bills in Congress. I have with me Mark Strand, former president of the Congressional Institute and a professor of legislative affairs at George Washington University, to dive into the omnibus budget process. Welcome, Mark.
Well, thanks for having me, Anne. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So what first got you interested in the omnibus?
Well, I worked in Congress for 24 years. It was interesting because I started during the Reagan administration. And omnibuses were just sort of becoming the tool that they used to settle most budget disputes. And there's one very famous State of the Union address where Ronald Reagan took a 3,000 pages and put it on the desk and said, if you ever send this to me again, I will not sign it. But of course, he did sign it. And we've been doing omnibuses most year as a substitute for the regular appropriation process.
So how would you describe the omnibus process to someone who knows nothing about it?
Well, it's a good question because the budget process is complex. To a certain degree, it's so complex that it hasn't worked properly since 1996, when it was the last time we actually passed a budget on time and by law. But what is supposed to happen is that both chambers of the House are supposed to pass a budget. They are then supposed to authorize the different programs in the executive branch. And then once the authorization is done, the appropriations committees are supposed to appropriate money for all the different agencies like defense and agriculture in 12 separate appropriation bills. This has to pass both the House and the Senate and be signed by the president. Once they get to the president, they become law. And then as long as it's before October 1st, which is the start of the fiscal year, the reality is that Congress has not been getting any of those things done. Maybe it passes a budget when both parties are in charge of both chambers. But even then, the authorization process is completely broken down so that two-thirds of the non-defense discretionary budget is unauthorized, even though that's actually against the rules of both the House and the Senate. And then finally, the appropriation bills never get passed in time. And so what happens on October 1st is the year's about to begin, the fiscal year, and if the appropriations haven't passed, by law, the government can't operate because only the Congress cannot appropriate money. The president can't spend money that Congress hasn't given him. So Congress has to either pass a continuing resolution, which sort of just postpones the date a little bit further, or pass an omnibus appropriation, which combines all 12 of those appropriation bills into one big fat bill.
So would it be fair to describe an omnibus as a sort of a stopgap for the proper procedure?
It is a stopgap, yes, in a sense, but it really is a substitute or an easy way around a tougher process. The reality is that the omnibus, right now it's a $1 trillion package, a $1.7 trillion package, it'll be this year. And that's a lot of different programs in the federal government, but no member of Congress can go through all those things in a couple of days when they get access to this. And so what is happening is that Congress just isn't performing its oversight. And it's passing this gigantic bill that no one can read, and most people have no idea what's inside of it, to fund the government. And as a result, we keep programs that don't work. We keep programs that are over budgeted. We keep programs that should have been canceled a long time ago. And we don't enact new programs that perhaps might be doing a better job. It really is a very cheap way out for Congress to do this omnibus appropriation bill because it's so difficult for anyone to know what's in it.
So instead of sitting down and hashing things out, this is kind of a shortcut, so to speak.
It is a shortcut, but it really cuts Congress's own power at the same time. What is supposed to take place is that Congress is supposed to authorize the programs in each agency. That means they have oversight, they review each program, and they can hold the executive branch accountable for the kind of job it's doing, whether it's doing a good job or a bad job. It can eliminate programs that don't work. But if you cut out the whole authorization process because you're running out of time and you just go to appropriations, none of that oversight takes place. Now, most members of Congress are authorizers. They're the appropriators on the Appropriation Committee and they're members on the Ways and Means Committee, but most members authorize. But since we never actually pass the authorization bills, because the Rules Committee waives that House rule, the oversight doesn't take place and Congress is just surrendering its oversight power to the executive branch.
Gotcha. So this is a pretty significant change from regular process.
Yeah, it is. Now, the budget process hasn't worked for some time. And that's that we're under the 1974 Budget Act. That's the law of the land. But it hasn't worked for some time. And really, Congress needs to make some changes for its own sake. It really should go to a biannual budget process where they do a two-year budget. So each Congress has its own budget. It should make sure all of its programs are authorized, that there's a sunset provision on most major federal programs that if they doesn't get reauthorized, it ends. And then there should be rules in the appropriations that make it difficult to pass an omnibus appropriation process without a huge ability of members of Congress to amend that bill and basically authorize on the fly.
Gotcha. So you would take care to disincentivize doing an omnibus as opposed to going about it the hard way.
Absolutely. And I think you actually used a very key word when you said disincentivize, because the incentives are all built into to make the process not work right. If the incentive is a deadline and the House leadership, and both parties do this, there's no one exempt from this. The House leadership simply says, well, we're running out of time. Let's just lump everything into one. There's not much anyone can do about it. The Speaker controls the Rules Committee. It's, as you know, the Rules Committee is the most important committee no one ever heard of. It's a supermajority. The Speaker appoints every single member of the majority. It's 9-4. And so the Rules Committee does what the Speaker wants them to do, generally speaking. And if the Speaker simply says, well, what I want you to do is waive the House rule that prohibits appropriations of non-authorized programs, the Rules Committee just simply puts a waiver in the special rule that the bill is considered under. And so if someone objects to an appropriation bill that has unauthorized things, it's out of order because the Rules Committee exempted the consideration. And the problem is so much of this is inside baseball that it's very difficult for the public to sort of track just what's happening with these things. But suffice it to say, they should be upset because it hasn't worked for some 27 years in a row where Congress has not passed the budget on time and according to law.
You know, from what you're describing here, it kind of sounds like it's the sort of situation where the rules are made up and the points don't matter. Would that be a fair description?
You know, it's the House passes on the first day of Congress a whole set of rules. The problem is that it can just exempt themselves from all those rules whenever it wants to. For instance, a budget point of order, if you pass a budget and then you overspend in your appropriation bill what the budget gave to you, normally a member of Congress could object and simply say, object, you went over your budget. So they waive that point of order. And so you can't object if they overspend. They do the same thing on the unauthorized appropriations, right? They just waive the rule. And so you're right. To a certain degree, it's they're making up the rules as they go along to be convenient to whatever it is the leadership wants to accomplish.
Gotcha. Now, I know you also mentioned, and I think this is an important point, is that it's kind of hard for an observer from the outside looking in to understand why this stuff is so important, right? Like, it seems that everybody, there's so many more important issues that this is just kind of falls by the wayside. Can you explain why this whole process is so important?
You know, it's obviously the American people's money. And we are borrowing an enormous amount of money in addition to that. So much so that if we were not the world's reserve currency, we would have a hyperinflationary economy. We'd be the Argentina of North America. We get away with it because the whole world has an interest in us not having inflation. But no other country in the world could get away with having our level of debt and our annual budget deficits, which are just they're unreasonable. This year, our budget deficit, if you subtract out the interest payments, the entire discretionary budget will be borrowed, which means we have the mandatory spending with Social Security and Medicare, and that can't be touched by Congress. But all the discretionary budget, from defense to education to agriculture to transportation, we're borrowing the entire thing. And this is not a good way to run a budget, because there's a consequence. Paul Ryan once called it the slowest moving train wreck in history, because we all know it's coming the day when our debt is unsustainable. We've seen a little bit of it this year by interest rates going up. The last 10 years, we've had very, very low interest rates, 0% to 0.5%. And so the government was borrowing money without really having to pay much interest back. But now the interest rates are going up 3%, 5%. And now all of a sudden the debt service is becoming the second largest part of our budget after defense. And so there's an accountability here. We are spending money, we are borrowing money that we don't have, and no one is checking up on the programs to see if we can eliminate programs that don't work. There's no oversight going on to get rid of inefficient programs or programs that we don't want to have. And we're letting the executive branch sort of make up rules as we go along. One of the big issues you would notice is normally, for instance, the Hyde Amendment has prohibited the use of taxpayer dollars to fund abortion. It's been going on since the 1970s that this rule has been in effect. But the Department of Defense just sort of made up a rule. We're going to pay for people to travel to have abortions. But that's not authorized in the law anywhere. So who's authorizing it? The Defense Department actually has an authorization that usually goes through annually. It's the only one. But the point is they're just making up the rules because Congress is not doing its job of conducting oversight to say, hey, we're the boss. The Constitution gives us the job of spending money and of oversight of the federal government and not you. So your job is to faithfully execute the laws. Our job is to make the laws. But if Congress won't make them, the administration makes it up as it goes along too.
So it sounds like it's really all a matter of incentives.
Yes, and there are some incentives you could do to reverse the situation. For instance, if you're going to do an omnibus appropriation bill, you should open up every section of the bill to amendment from the floor that hasn't been authorized. So if you have an entire agriculture budget and you haven't authorized the Agriculture Department, that should be free for all amendments to offer amendments from the House floor at any point. Now, appropriators won't want that. So appropriators now have an incentive to tell the agriculture authorizers to get your act together and get this bill passed because we don't want to do it. You could also penalize anything that was unauthorized. So you have to spend, say, 5% less. Kathy McMorris Rogers has a bill, the USA Act, that would basically cut every program that's not reauthorized before it can be appropriated. So the appropriators have to appropriate less money than they want to do. Again, that was give the leadership and the appropriators an incentive to get the authorizers to do their job. We could also do some other things. I think, for instance, like, let's be honest, we never finish it by October 1st. Let's change the fiscal year to January 1st. And so we have given them 3 extra months to get the job done. People say, well, then it'll be after the election. Generally speaking, they pass a continuing resolution to get past the election anyway. So why not go ahead and just extend the fiscal year, get them the extra 3 months to get the job done?
Gotcha. So this is not an unsolvable problem.
It absolutely isn't. It's a matter of willpower. Budget votes are tough votes. I mean, you get elected to make decisions on how we're going to spend the taxpayers' money. And that means there are tough decisions to be made. That means when you cut one person's program, they're going to be really unhappy. And you raise someone else's program, there'll be some people happy and other people aren't happy. It's politically tough. But let's face it, Congress is the big leagues of legislatures. You're going to have to take a few high, hard fastballs once in a while when you're doing your work, because this is for all the goods. This is the most important legislative job in the world, and you signed up for it voluntarily. So make the tough decisions and do the job right.
Sure. So I guess just to put it all in perspective, if the current process continues as is, if we continue on our current trajectory with the budget, what is the situation going to look like in 5 to 10 years?
I think the reality is that if we do not make tough decisions on the budget and we do not extend oversight, interest payments alone are going to start crowding out everything else in the budget. by far, in terms of the discretionary budget, this is the $1.7 trillion we'll spend out of our $5 trillion budget this year. Defense is the largest part, but you're going to have to start crowding out the things that you can spend money on because the interest payments are getting so high. And the bottom line is, at one point, somebody's going to come up with a currency that's reliable, whether it's a digital currency in the future or some sort of more reliable currency. There isn't one right now, which is why we get away with it. But if the United States is no longer the reserve currency, all of a sudden people are going to say, well, if you want me to lend you money, if I'm China or Great Britain or Japan, I may need require a higher interest payment because you're running such a huge debt. I don't trust you're going to be able to pay me back. And this is what happened in Europe, for instance, during the euro crisis. Italy and Greece had to pay 7, 8, 9% interest on their debt because people didn't trust them to be able to pay it back. If that ever happens to us and our interest rates, we go into what they call a debt spiral. It sounds an awful lot like a death spiral, but it's kind of a financial debt, but a debt spiral where their interest rates keep going up, your finances get worse, so your interest rates keep going up, and you just go into a spiral where eventually interest rates crowd out everything in your budget. It's obviously unsustainable. We're going to have to fix things like Social Security and Medicare, which are not on solid financial footing. And so we at least need to get the discretionary part of the budget under control. That is going to take a lot of discipline and some willpower, and quite frankly, the insistence of the American public that they do their job.
Gotcha. So just to sum up what you've been talking about here today, it sounds like the omnibus process is sort of a stopgap or a substitute for the regular appropriations process. And that has caused a lot of significant issues in Congress and is going to continue to cause issues until someone steps up to address it.
You got it. Exactly.
All right. So one last question. Where can our listeners learn more about the omnibus process?
Well, on the Congressional Institute website, there are a number of articles about the budget, including budget reform. And a lot of good think tanks have put this out. A lot of groups who are worried about Congress's role in the Constitution have been doing work on the budget. But I would direct it to some of the white papers on the Congressional Institute website about budget reform and the appropriation process and the broken authorization process. And most of those things are written in language that a person who is interested in government could understand.
Thank you, folks, for listening in. You can find our film Omnibus on our YouTube channel or at fedsoc.org. That's FEDSOC.org. As always, the Federalist Society takes no opinion on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. That's a wrap.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.